Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. I want to apologize for the late start. When the news gets hot, every morning I come to the station and I demand to talk to the Guardian legal team so I could get a sense of what I can say and what I cannot say on the radio. Y'all will forgive me. As you can see, the news is hot today. We want to get into some of the issues, so we may not get to all of the issues today, but let us start here. The press statement that was issued by the Prime Minister yesterday on ordering flags to be flown at half-mast in commemoration of HMBS Flamingo. Tomorrow we commemorate an important date in our nation's history. That's today. Calling for us to pause, reflect, and pay tribute to those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. I wish to advise the public that I am issuing an official directive that all national flags across our country be flown at half-mast today, May 10th, 2023. This observance signifies our collective mourning and unwavering respect for the brave servicemen, able seaman Fenric Stirrup, Marine Seaman Austin Smith, Marine Seaman David Tucker, and Marine Seaman Edward Williams, who tragically lost their lives in the HMBS Flamingo incident. The Flamingo incident, also known as the Cuban incident, the key Santo Domingo incident, or the sinking of the HMBS Flamingo, occurred on the 10th of May 1980, just under 6 weeks of the force's official establishment. For more details and the history, the write-up of the incident, it's a wonderfully detailed description of what happened. You can find that on the Royal Bahamas Defense Force website if you search the Flamingo Incident, Royal Bahamas Defense Force. And again, this observance signifies our collective mourning and unwavering respect for these brave servicemen. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Mr. Ian Munnings. Mr. Newry, good morning.
It's always good to be here. It's Mash Down Wednesday. Man down, right? Mash up, man down Wednesday.
Yes.
That name I always fumble about, but I appreciate.
You're busy getting up.
Yes.
Basically.
But I appreciate these days because we're able to analyze what is happening and scrutinize what is in the news. I see you recognize the Defense Force officers who give the ultimate sacrifice.
Yes.
Some years ago, and they need to continue to be remembered and saluted. I acknowledge this half mass. I want people to take a moment and remember that. Mm-hmm. Also, I want to remember the four Defense Force officers who were captured, held hostage, and taken into Honduras some years ago, and tortured, I need to say that, right?
Yeah.
They got no commendation, no medal, or no recognition that they were
kept. I don't even know their names.
Well, I have their names.
Good.
And I will call the names, because we need to remind the powers that be that we had Defense Force officers who were kidnapped out of the Bahamas.
Yeah.
We had Defense Force officers who were tortured for doing their job. We had Defense Force officers who were taken out of the Bahamas and taken all the way into Honduras. And like I say right now, thank God for Idris Reed, right? Because he negotiated them being released from Honduras jail or hole, whatever it was, right? For just being Defense Force officers to come back to the Bahamas. And that story must be told. And particularly when we have had Defense Force officers doing their job, gave the ultimate sacrifice, which is their life, right? We need to commemorate and recognize our protectors, the border controllers, who will continue to sacrifice themselves in order to propel and protect the Bahamas to the borders.
Now, listen, we need a Jubilee village where space can be made for people like Idris Reed to tell every story they have within them. Right? For all of the story keepers, all of the history keepers to share these stories with us. Because we're an oral society still, despite the massive expanse of technology over the country, right? We are still an oral society. We keep history orally, and we need to find a way to document all of these treasured stories. A Jubilee Village Storytellers Hour, right? And you can broadcast, you can record it, broadcast it live, replay on a Jubilee YouTube channel. Here's to another Jubilee event in celebration of the Golden Jubilee of Independence in the school. In celebration of the Golden Jubilee of Independence, the School of Social Sciences presents From Majority Rule to Independence and Beyond at the Harry Seymour Library. It's starting today. Today is day one, Wednesday the 10th of May. From 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., we will have keynote speaker Allison Maynard Gibson, KC, Chair of UB Board of Trustees, and a panel, Arts and Culture is Not a Luxury, featuring Mr. Mark Humes, Mr. Travolta Cooper, and Ms. Suhaila Hepburn. Tomorrow, day two, Thursday the 11th of May, 2023, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., we will have keynote speaker Dr. Cremel Saunders, Associate Professor of Sociology at University of the Bahamas. And the panel, Building Community, Building Equity, will include Ms. Alicia Wallace, Erin Green, and Dr. Richard L. Fritz. Another interesting event. Now, tomorrow, I'm going to have Reg Eldon on. We're going to be talking about two courses, Grief and Loss Recovery and Creative Aging. And maybe tomorrow I'll have a bit of space to talk more about the Jubilee event on May 5th and ask people what they heard. And if they heard their people name get called, that's a look here. You want to talk about like a tribute? People want to hear their family name get called, recognized, heralded among the nation builders. So we'll talk a bit more about that on Thursday, tomorrow. Now, today's discussion, gentlemen, let me start here by saying every article that I've referenced this week is either directly about human rights or has a human rights intersection, right? Which would give us a sense of why the government creating a human rights committee, right, is so important. Because we got a lot of human rights issues that we're facing. Like Mr. Newry said yesterday, when we hear human rights, we usually hear Haitians and heathens, gay people, right? But if we take a closer examination, we'll see that there are human rights issues everywhere. Some of the articles I had on the table this week, AG, policy expectation that corporal punishment should not happen in schools. Speaking to the 43rd session of the Universal Periodic Review at the United Nations earlier this month, last month, and at the end of last month, the Attorney General said that the policy expectation of the government is that there's no corporal punishment in school. But we know that there's still corporal punishment in school. In fact, when you delve into the article, you'll see that there is a discrepancy here. Now, this is a human rights issue. First of all, children have the right to a life free of violence. Corporal punishment should be, at the very least, the last resort. For those people who believe in corporal punishment, it should be the last resort. There's some of us that don't agree with corporal punishment. But that the government will go abroad and say, we have a policy that say, don't beat children in school, but children are being beaten in school, that's a human rights issue. Children have the right to have a life free of violence. The beating is one thing, but imagine you're a child and your parents tell you And you're a little bright, you're aware, you know the corporal punishment is not allowed, but you know your teacher's still threatening you with getting sent to the principal for beating.
I'd like to say something on that particular part, Aaron. I think that discipline is still the order of the day. I think that persons in the country who knew what it was when you had a senior master or even a teacher, you couldn't go back home and you couldn't say, well, the teacher disciplined you. You would have gotten another beating. We were the village that raised the children. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, we are being influenced by all of these walks of life. We can take a look at our neighbors in the West or the East. We can go either way. We can see those things that they have taken out of the school in terms of disciplinarians being able to discipline the students within those schools. We're seeing those young children that they carry weapons into the schools. We're seeing them inflict those weapons on their schoolmates, their teachers. We're seeing the violence towards the teachers in the school, where predominantly a lot of our teachers are women rather than men, or balance within the school system. We're seeing a lot of these children that are having these social issues are coming to school, and teachers are afraid to even teach or even say certain things to the students, because they will bring their parents probably to school to fight the teachers, or even the student fighting the teachers. But I know if you're coming into an institution that we call school and you're coming in to learn and you really want to learn, the reality of it is just that any way you go, there is rules and regulations. And when you cannot abide by the rules and regulations, then that means your parents should find some place for you to go. But to say you're coming in school and you're being disruptive and you're actually cursing in the classroom or doing whatever you feel like you want to do that you do home, school is not a home for you.
Okay. Now, watch, two things I want to say. First of all, if I required a weapon to be able to transport myself from home to school safely without being seriously injured by other people, right? I wouldn't want to leave the weapon outside the school where other children could pick it up and be reckless with it. I would want to carry it with me into the school. I'm just being facetious.
I know you are.
To point out that a lot of these children are victims of violence before they even get into the schools.
Right.
Another point I want to make is this. What if all of this violence we're seeing, particularly with parents, right, who don't sort of respect the culture of education in the Bahamas, could all of that be the result of young people who were beaten in school, beaten at home for being beaten in school, mm-hmm. never really given an opportunity to process that trauma, continually abused, both psychologically, physically, and emotionally, and now those people have children? I would say that maybe what we're seeing is the result of beating, A, or B.
I don't want to use the word beating, Aaron.
But beating is what it is.
It's the difference between being beaten and somebody taking advantage of you, and you're being disciplined. Discipline is the order of the day, not beaten.
Assault. Would you call in a beating is an assault?
Said attacking. In which terms are you saying attacking?
Listen.
Because I know that you went to school, and if you was out of line, we had a senior master seeing.
I can be honest.
You would have tested this. The senior master comes with that little level of bamboo stick, right?
I still traumatized.
And those little gabardine that you wear, or those little pants.
Yes. I'm so traumatized by that idea.
You know, when you saw him coming around that bend, you better not be doing something wrong.
Yes. If they call
him for you, you already know what's going to happen.
Ian, I can be honest with you.
That made you better, though.
No, ain't nobody at QCA even ever attempted to beat me, and I can't imagine what would have happened.
So you was a good girl.
I didn't say I was a good girl. No, I didn't say I was a good girl, nor did I say I didn't get into any problems. What I said was, I can't imagine nobody at QC trying to beat me. I could be honest with you. And it's beaten is what it is. Let me tell you why. Because even when it's in the home, with people you trust,
mm-hmm.
is traumatic.
Is it beaten or discipline? See, we have to be able to see the difference between what you concluded as child abuse or beaten, to compared to you're being disciplined for doing something you're not supposed to do. They're two different things.
I can give you another contribution to that. I'm 47, right? That's 40 years of conscious living. The stories, like schools people from different schools compare the style of discipline, since you won't call it discipline, that they were forced, that they had forced upon them. People are legendary for beating, for discipline in Turin. What I would say to you is that if it were nothing but discipline, legends would not have been made out of those who hold the whip. You hear people telling stories. These things hold a place in their psyche and in their bodies. And what I'm suggesting is, while people say that what we are experiencing is the result of the removal of that culture, what I would say is what we're experiencing is the result of a reckless practice of that culture.
I'll disagree.
A disregard, because let me tell you why it's a beating. Because the children that you think that you are going to discipline and correct with force, because they are children, mm-hmm. have been forced. Sometimes beyond the control of their parents, they have been forced to live adult lives. You're talking about young men who have been forced to sacrifice their future. And when they leave school, they go to the store to work. We're talking about young men and women who, understanding that their mothers must take on lovers to provide economically for the house, to have another hand to throw in the pot, these young people protect their siblings, their younger siblings, from having to witness that, from being molested in situations, right? And what I'm saying is that it becomes beating because you are forcing a person who has had to live as an adult to lie prostrate, because the way, is it prostrate or prostrate? Anyway, to lie on the ground like little children and take beating, and then they have to get up and continue their lives. They have to work and live like adults, but they got to rule like children. And that is a psychological violence that we have exacted on our children. See, there was a time when all children knew that you had to take on a degree of responsibility. You had to take on a degree of adulthood, and you would be regarded and recognized and treated like an adult when you did those things.
See, I want you to answer that one right there. See,
no, I know we're supposed to transition.
Yeah. No, we can transition right now.
Because what I'm looking at,
but anybody can help you.
This is a mashup Wednesday.
When you
come in from school as a young man, I growing up, uh-huh. and you were taught responsibility. You either got a job to Super Value or City Market,
yeah.
and you pack bag.
Yes.
And you got your couple of dollars through the tips, and being very cordial, being very courteous to the people that you're packing the bags.
Y'all are middle class people, because working class people and poor people didn't go to school and then go pack bags after school.
You had to go to school. But after you finish school, you can go inside the city market, and CA could attest to that.
You can
go pack a bag, and even though some people used to let you walk from CR Walker down to Market Street to the end of Market Street mm-hmm. for $2 or a dollar.
But it was an honest living.
And you learned the responsibility of working. You appreciated the fact that when your mother made the sacrifice to get you them Jordans and those travel forks, then you understand why you're wearing them.
We ain't talking about you. You're just middle class, man. We're talking about poor people. And I just want you to know.
These are poor people.
No, you weren't.
We went to the pump. We got the trolleys and loaded up the trolley. We went to the pump. We got the trolley.
Your mommy was saving up to buy you Jordans. Let me tell you something.
Ma'am, I didn't know that was a request.
I wasn't poor. I wasn't poor and I was in middle class. My daddy bought me a pair of Jordans in 1988. And somebody thiefed them like 3 days after I got them. And I never get another pair of Jordans until I think I bought them myself.
I never had one.
Okay, Paul.
You see that?
Let me go to the caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Oh, caller, producer, thank you for paying that beep pay. My producer, dear caller, my producer stands in solidarity with you. And he wanted the world to know. And I apologize. Okay? I'm sorry we kept you that long. We're going to transition to another even more exciting topic for today's discussion. It is the Mr. Newry, we're going to talk science DNA testing could spell trouble or the Shantytown ruling. I want to talk the Shantytown ruling. It is in the paper today. And I want to read the judgment from the ruling as it is printed in the Guardian and then another portion as it's printed in the Tribune. But let me tell you why. Because I think that people don't understand the ruling. I think it's important to understand the ruling so we understand what possibly went wrong, how we could prevent that from happening again, and the best ways to move forward, right? So let's start with the article, CGA orders demolition of two shanty homes. That's the 4th of May, 2023, Nassau Guardian. So Ian said the evidence is unequivocal that there has been a massive expansion of unregulated communities. So he acknowledges that. The unregulated communities, despite the ruling by Grant Thompson. But he said people in breach of the order must be aware of it for it to be actionable against them. Goes on, Ms. Stephanie St. Fleur, the president of Respect Our Homes Limited and the president of Human Rights Bahamas, gave evidence by affidavit that these organizations visited the shanty towns in 2021 to advise residents of the terms of the injunctions. He said, specific individuals were not identified. Notwithstanding this, I do not find that there is adequate evidence that anyone other than the parties to this action, that's the two people whose homes have been ordered to be demolished, could be said to have properly had notice of the injunction. The respondents took no steps in accordance with the rules to substitute service of the injunction on persons who they say are or were unknown to them. A simple order for the posting of the orders on the doors of the residents, as was done to cause the additional occupants to attend court in this application, could have been obtained. Further, while there may have been press statements and notices placed in certain communities, this was not done with the authority of an order for substituted service. While orders can be made against persons unknown, the offenders in this case are actually identifiable. That's the two people who the government got a successful order to demolish their homes. It is only persons who can be fixed with notice of the order could be said to have been in breach. The broadcasting of the information or its general distribution could not properly suffice. And go now to the Tribune article. Shanty win, but for just two homes. That's the same date, May 4th. Government lawyers argued Shantytown residents had adequate notice of the injunction, citing press statements and communications from government officials. He said, I do not find that there is adequate evidence that anyone other than the parties to this action could be said to have properly had notice on the injunction. C.J. Winder said in his ruling, the respondents took no steps in accordance with the rules to substitute service of the injunction on persons who they say are or were unknown to them. A simple order for the posting of the orders on the doors of the residents, as was done to cause the additional occupants to attend court in this application, could have been obtained. While there may have been press statements and notices placed in certain communities, this was not done with the authority of an order for substituted service. Now, when you read the Tribune article, it says the onus is now fully on the Minister of Works to initiate a process under the Building Regulations Act. That's not the words of the judge, C.J. Winder. That's the Tribune reporter. I want to go now to the Building Regulations Act, and I want to go to Section 13, Service of Notices. And if we go to Section 13, Subsection D, it says, in the case of any notice, order, or other document which is to be given or served on the owner of any premises, if it is impossible or not practicable, after reasonable inquiry, to ascertain the name and address of the person to or on whom it should be given or served, or if the premises are unoccupied, by addressing it to the person concerned by the description of owner, so by addressing it to owner of the premises, naming them to which it relates, and delivering it to some person on the premises, or if there is no person on the premises to whom it can be delivered, by affixing it or a copy of it to some conspicuous part of the premises.
My question with the loophole in that is...
No, this is a pause. Where's the loophole?
The loophole is particularly, who's the owner of the property?
No.
Is it not Crown Land?
No, listen. It didn't say the owner of the property. It said the owner of the premises. And since you don't know who the owner of the premises is, and it's not practical, right? It ain't really reasonable the amount of work you have to go through to determine the name of the person who's occupying it. You don't need the name. You get the order, and you put owner, O-W-N-E-R, on it, and you affix it. You post it on a part of the house that is conspicuous. People tend to go through the front door. So you put it on the front door. But I wouldn't stop there. Some people like to go through the back door. What's up, ancient man? Give me my rare shoes, right? I'm putting it on the back door. And some people go in the house through the window. I'm putting it on the window, too.
So what the issue here is, all the 300 houses that the government identifies should be demolished.
Right.
Right? Who and when you say should be demolished, these were houses that were built apparently after
the injunction. That said, don't build no houses.
Not the ones who were there before the injunction, but when the injunction came on, the 300 families who built houses after injunction. So we starting off from there, right? And now we have an order which says that notice must be given to these people. Right, and then you could demolish it through the process, proper procedures.
Right.
However, the government did not serve or give proper notice.
That's it.
And this is where the issue is: did the government give proper notice? And how does one give proper notice? There's instructions. Hold on a minute. There's instructions that gives what proper notice is. We all know what proper notice is, and for sure, our government knows what proper notice is because they write the law. And the issue is: did they follow the law?
But I think what Erin was saying, and she made way for it, she said that if a particular person is not identified, whoever's the owner, or for whatever reason they know you're coming and then they hide, or they're running, or they're diving, then what should have happened is that you would have put those documents
saying.
On those papers. But
they didn't do it.
How can we say they didn't?
That's what the court say. I ain't not saying
so it. So you're saying that the court is saying that the government of the Bahamas did not tag
any of the houses.
Only two.
They
only tagged two houses correctly, according to the procedure laid out in the Building Regulations Act that I was able to Google
a problem with that.
At home.
So we need. So you're saying to me that we need to go to those particular 300 places that were built after the injunction, and the Bahamians need to stay put.
No,
the minister of Works
is responsible.
So the minister responsible for work attach a team to go into that area where those 300 houses are, and let's just staple all over the house so you can't miss.
Well, you could do it in half an hour. We could do that in half an hour.
So that's one of
the hard work.
So Ian,
it's hour work.
One of the questions I have
overtime.
One of the questions I have today is right. The article says that the Ministry of Works can rely on other provisions available to them in the Building Regulations Act. In today's Guardian, right, the Attorney General, it says essentially the same thing, right? He said yesterday the government still intends to proceed, but was unable to provide a timeline. He said the government will target structures that are in violation of the buildings. Regulation,
but Erin, my question is, what is
something
they,
to analyze? By the way,
but my thing is, if they are not have anything dealing with the regulations, like if the house is in good structure, but aren't they on government ground land?
Hold on, we ain't get to that.
We ain't get to that.
We ain't
part
get
yet.
To that yet. But we got to go step by step.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, the issue now is the Attorney General say now we're going to go after houses that was built improperly. This is the issue. What you talking about building on Crown Land? We ain't reached it yet. Houses that are built improperly, right? Not built to code.
These are the best Masons, the best carpenters in the Bahamas.
They are the workforce in the Bahamas. Right?
They know how to build things to code.
I don't have the. I don't.
These things don't move no more. They experienced Dorian.
They are the workforce.
See, they don't move no more.
I don't have.
You see the problem we're getting ourselves into, right?
My thing is, I'm trying to figure out whether or not we're running a tuck shop or we're running
pause,
a country.
Stop. Pause.
I'm trying to figure Mr. out Manning, if we're running a tuck shop.
I tell you this a long time. I didn't tell you what's up. You didn't believe. Anyway. What I'm saying is this, is most importantly, I wanted the audience to hear the ruling and then to hear the provisions in the Building Regulations Act that are being referenced and to understand that we are not talking about whether migrants and people without permission should build homes on Crown land, right? We're not talking about whether people should be allowed to build unregulated homes or unlawfully build, two separate things. What we're saying is interrogating what went wrong. What does the ruling mean? And what are the next step for the government? Because, yeah, people are upset. We get that. But people are upset because they don't necessarily understand why the ruling evolved the way that it did. Producer, keep playing the music. I hear you. My bad. We go into a break. When we get back from the break, we can talk about this maybe a little bit more. And or maybe we get into our next subject, which is even more exciting. Y'all stay tuned. It's Mashup Man Down Wednesday with On The Clock, Guardian Radio AM, Ian Munning, Cecil Newry, Aaron Green. You stay tuned. Fresh news, smart talk all day.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bala Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bala hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want to find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to the On The Clock Guardian Radio Man Down Mashup Wednesday, when we come together to delve into the issues and see who could be the first man in the generic sense, gender neutral, up to the top of the discussion. But let me start here. First of all, it's Tamron season. That's what you want, Tamron? Oh, is a caller? Producer, let's go get that caller. It's Tamron season. I mean, it's not Tamron season. We late. I can get back to that. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hello, good morning. Calling to share a poem.
Yes, ma'am. Share the poem.
Okay, it's the HMB Flamingo.
Yes, ma'am. Share it with the audience.
When the Bahamas became independent in 1974, the protection of our borders was gone. An act was passed in Parliament on March 31, 1980, hence the Royal Bahamas Defense Force was born. It was birthed by the first Commodore, William Swinley, OBE, to defend the Bahamas and protect its territorial integrity. Whilst the leaders were trying to establish the Bahamas in identity, on May 8, the HMB Flamingo crew headed by Commodore Amos Rowe left on routine patrol to protect the border, and the water of the Bahamas was their goal. They sailed for a day with no violators in sight. But on May 10, two Cuban vessels, Ferocious 164 and 54, were spotted poaching in Bahamian waters, which wasn't right. Flamingo sailed towards the vessels, and they flee. The HMB Flamingo was not about to let them go free. The vessel refused to surrender, and a chase they ensued. So the crew of the Flamingo did what they were trained to do. They fired shots, and the vessel stopped. They boarded and apprehended the offenders. While the offenders were on vessel in tow, they headed back towards Key Santo Domingo. Then two Cuban fighter jets came in retaliation, flew overhead, and fired shots. Flamingo's crew thought just to make them scared. They retreated and came back a time later. This time their vengeance was greater. They hit the ship and it began to sink. This all happened in a blink. When the count was made, they realized A.B. Fenwick Thurrup, M.S. David Tucker, Edward Williams, and Austin Smith were not saved. Fighting to protect the Bahamas, their lives they gave. Let's never forget their ultimate sacrifice or name. Let it forever be etched on the Memorial Wall of Fame. To the families, we understand your pain, but be comforted in knowing they died fulfilling their dreams. As a country, let's not forget the events of May 10th. Those men of the HMBS showed their patriotism and their strength, never knowing what is beforehand, but vowing to protect this Bahama land. To the men of the HMBS Flamingo, we salute you. Thanks.
No, thank you, madam. The whole nation thanks you for sharing that with us and on their behalf. Thank you very much, ma'am. Please leave your name. Ma'am, please call back and leave your name and number with the producer so we could leave a copy of Lutzke and other fantastic tales for you at the front desk of the Guardian. You, my friend, need to continue writing. Please continue writing. Now, to the Jubilee Committee. Look here. You see that? Bahamians are out there waiting for an opportunity to plug in and participate and do their part in nation building. We got to build systems that are inclusive. It is to the government's benefit to build systems that can capture as much, as many of our resources as possible with the least amount of effort. Systems that incite within us, not just encourage, incite within us a desire to be a part of the whole. To that caller, that poet, please call back. And give the producer your name and number so we can leave a book for you at The Guardian. Mr. Nuri, back to this thing we were talking about in the shantytown ruling decision. My apologies, Mr. Ian had to leave.
Go ahead.
So I get this feeling, right? And this may just be the miserable part of me, right? Remember Andy Rooney from 60 Minutes?
Yes.
Yeah, that may be the curmudgeon part of me. This is a culture. Like, I think what happened here, like, there are rules, but you don't feel like you need to follow the rules because you're right, you have the authority.
We also must appreciate the sentiments of Bahamians and the frustration that is happening,
yeah.
Right? Bahamians in general feeling that there's a double standards regarding what is happening in the Bahamas, especially from immigrants versus behemoths. I understand why behemoths are vexed at the judge. I understand the justice. I understand. And long and short, they're saying that despite government being at fault, mm-hmm. despite the ineptitude of our government, the idea that the shanty town must go, and that a good, reasonable judge, this is what the regular citizens
it's are thinking
saying.
In their head.
Yes,
yeah.
thinking in their head, that a good, reasonable judge should cast a blind eye.
Yeah, right? To that little misstep.
To that little misstep and push forward justice, mm-hmm. and that justice is being denied for in the masses. Mm-hmm. But of course, I know that judges have to be above such and make sure that justice is blind as they carry out the law.
Right. Producer, let's go to that call. Also, the idea, I know what must be frustrating Bahamians.
It might be the lady.
Oh, right. Producer, check the call. It may be the lady. I didn't want to pick it up if it is. Mm-hmm. Is that of the homes that were ordered to be demolished, the two homes belong to Bahamians.
And that is concerning. And this is why Bahamians are getting vexed. It seems that we are systematically being targeted, dismissed, being regulated as being second-class citizens yeah. in our own home. So why us?
That's what it feels
that's
like.
What it feels
but
like.
That's why it's important to get into these rulings and interrogate it and get a sense of what is really being said. And then we could balance what we're feeling from what it is that we understand.
And I would question yeah. you now, what happens to the Bahamians? Government can't just force Bahamians off of land. I wouldn't say they're entitled to the land, but
right.
you don't tell them come off in 40 days
see,
and don't have some place.
The government got to accommodate people. And let me get to this call. Caller, you are on the clock.
Yes. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, CA.
Hey, good morning.
Listen, I don't know if I'm able to say this, but I think this CJ, to me, he has shown his biasness. If somebody comes before the court, if you go before the court and the magistrate asks you if you knew what you were doing was wrong, are you going to say yes or no? In most cases, people are going to say no. You should have asked these individuals, how long have you been in the Bahamas?
I got you.
Okay.
Can you speak English? Can you read? These were the type of questions, but just to go and ask, did you know that what... that there was an injunction in place? Come on, that's a leading question.
I got you.
You know that the
let's respond. Let's respond to that. Go ahead, Aaron.
My concern is that we're following the proper procedures, right? Because remember, the three branches of government have to be very careful when they quote-unquote critique each other, right?
Yes.
So I just want us to be measured in our speech when we respond in to the...
Yes, but okay. I wanted to hear his point.
No, right.
And I got that you allowed him to speak it.
Yeah, man.
But I assume that the callers asked about duty of care. What duty of care does the Chief Justice have regarding the case?
I got you. He's bound by the law and the procedure, right? The procedures. What I thought was interesting about his commentary was this, right? He said, like, the type of questions that you were asking these people. And I think in this ruling, what we may not understand is that the government had to show proof of proper notice.
There you go.
The government had to show that they followed the procedure properly.
But do Chief Justices interrogate people? Or do they have lawyers who are presenting a point? Decide for the persons who are inhabiting the land and decide for the government to
right.
say, hey.
The truth is, in the common law, I'm not sure. I watch plenty of American TV and you see the judge talking to witnesses on the stand all the time, right? But I'm not sure if that is the case in Bahamian law. One second, Ian, let's get to this caller and then I let you, okay. We can close out. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller. You still there? One, two.
Go ahead, Ian. My thing, Aaron, is as a Bahamian national, there is no way I can go on this planet that I can think about and go to a country illegally, settle ground in an area that I consider that I like it or is behind somewhere, build a structure.
Hold on, are you sure? Because plenty Bahamians...
you try?
I would suggest to you that
you
maybe
tried.
Plenty Bahamians have.
I've seen a lot of people in those countries be rejected in terms of
which
being
country?
And they get deported.
Which country are you talking about?
Are you talking
country.
About the U.S. or the
Give
global
me example.
North?
Go to Jamaica.
Go to Jamaica. They have people squat in Jamaica all the time.
They Jamaicans.
No man, they got Bahamian squatting.
They Jamaicans were squatting.
Bahamian squatting.
No, those Jamaican land where they live, they allow them people to live there. No,
you
sir.
Because of how the land is vast and scattered, you can sit there and build.
You'd be surprised.
The point I'm trying to make is that you enter a country illegally. Mm-hmm. The thing that happened the other day, which is unprecedented, and I think that was warranted and needed to happen, when the government allowed those persons that from birth now, and the fathers could give right to citizenship, and the children that have
the Privy Council interpreted provisions, right?
Uh-huh. And then the children at birth can apply or become citizens. They don't have to wait until 18.
Our citizens, yeah.
Our citizens.
Now they are citizens.
And they don't have to wait until 18 to apply or become citizens. Yeah. I think that was much needed. And I think that should have given the government an idea, the difference between what we now distinguish as legal and illegal, persons who are illegal as in migrants, and persons that have the right to the country.
Hold on, I got to get up.
I'm just saying at that point.
Yeah.
So now those persons that have entered the country illegally, who have been now built those shanty houses and these shanty towns, we can clearly say at this point, y'all who say y'all is Bahamians, y'all got the right now, you're Bahamians, you're in a limbo no more, you can get an ID, you can get this, you can get that, you can come out there and you can pay rent just like every Bahamian and contribute.
Pause.
All of those other people.
Right there. No, pause
all
right
those
there.
Other people.
That's a good point.
Living
pause
off
right
the
there.
Government. No,
The problem isn't that people don't want to come out of the shanty towns and pay rent. The problem is there is no place to pay rent. There is a housing crisis.
Where is this? In Abaco? You're talking about Nassau? Because you can find apartments in Nassau. We could cut our house in half and start renting to some people.
For $100 a month?
They ain't going to be $100 a month. Okay, they're going to have to pay their share, fair share.
What is the
because, see, if you... Their fair share... The fair share is
in
when I go...
In our own neighborhood.
Hold on.
The fair share...
You know they pay $100.
Not only is
that's
there...
a week.
Hold on. Not only is there a housing crisis...
In the ghetto, they pay $125 a week.
Not only is there a housing crisis, but we are possibly heralding the people responsible. We are heralding the people responsible for the housing crisis as national heroes. You know what it is to build your empire on quieting titles and then get up 50 years later and talk about how maybe quieting titles is not the right way for the country to move forward?
Because they've already made it, Aaron. They've already made it.
Okay,
and the
then let's be
that
fair.
The
because
people.
All y'all telling me is that Bahamians are allowed to be criminals in their own country.
No, I'm saying to you is that.
And what the court is saying is that nobody could trounce on the law.
The right to the land, Aaron. The right to the land is the Bahamian people. The right to the land is for the Bahamian people.
Is it? Have you demanded that? That's the next thing.
It's a birthright.
Have you demanded that?
I didn't have to demand it. It's a birthright.
Was the Constitution interpreted to determine such? Because the governments don't believe it's a birthright.
This is called the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
The government doesn't believe it's your birthright.
My father and mother were born British subjects. After that independence or self-governance, they became persons of the Commonwealth. They became now Bahamian citizens.
Because they were always people of the Commonwealth.
No, they became Bahamian citizens now. So as a Bahamian citizen entitled to the right to the land, this is their land. So we can't be disenfranchised in our home. No, sir. Anybody else should be disenfranchised, but not us at home.
But here's the question I have for you and for all Bahamians. How long will you live in a country when you are in charge of your own country? How long will you continue to break laws because it is politically expedient for you? Because it is expedient for you when in the alternative, all you have to do is change the law to suit your means. Like, look at how they changed statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse. All you got to do is change the law to suit your needs. Voices continue to break it. That is perhaps the most facetious thing I've said on this radio, and I hope I've made my point.
You've made your point, Touche.
Same way. Why turn left on red illegally when all you have to do is fix the law to turn left on red legally?
I think the Bahamians are having an issue, or the mere fact that when foreigners are coming into the country and not paying their fair share, I think that is the issue, not the mere fact that it's an immigrant.
Pause.
If you're coming in here and you can work and you can pay the bills like I paying my bills.
Paying the bills.
No, they ain't paying the bills. No, when you tell me you're running a wire through a bush and
13 or 100 of y'all on this particular wire, y'all ain't paying BEC, or if you're paying BEC, you're ain't paying BEC the way I pay.
So only Bahamians could do it.
No, I'm saying
only
US,
very rich Bahamians.
But the Bahamians have the right to the land, so
only,
I still prefer my Bahamians to benefit
very
from
rich
it, rather than a foreigner to come in my country and benefit from it.
Only,
see, what do you think about that?
Only
this
very
has
rich
been a mashed down, man's down, mash up Wednesday.
But most importantly, the most important part of this conversation, we're going to say thank you again to the Bahamian who called in and gave us, shared with the whole nation.
Yes, I can appreciate
the poem. You could appreciate everything, man. Nice.
I enjoyed it. We should be able to continue to the
yes.
next side.
Thank you, producer, for your grace and patience. Thank you, audience, for tuning in. Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry is up next. Thank you.